Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up.
The conductor.
Goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right. Shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
This was a tough loss. Because you shouldn't have lost. Shouldn't have lost against Trailblazers. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Houston Rockets lose at home to the Portland Trailblazers, 117-107. Trailblazers who aren't even in the playoff picture. They are currently game and a half outside of the playoff picture right now. Memphis Grizzlies sitting comfortably in the eighth spot, then the Spurs, and then the Trailblazers. So they're not even like one slot back of the playoffs. They're a couple spots out. But this was a game that the Rockets just, they had no business losing. At least with the Grizzlies on the front portion of this back-to-back, you could make the argument that the Grizzlies are a youthful, surging team. A lot of upside. They played a really hard-fought game. They beat the Rockets in transition. Yeah, you can point to all those things for the Grizzlies' loss. You can say Westbrook didn't play. You can say Harden had a really inefficient game. This game, though, you had everybody on deck. You had Russell Westbrook, who had one of his best games of the season, honestly. Westbrook finished the night with 31 points, 11 rebounds, 12 assists. He had a steal. But the most notable stat from Westbrook, he was also 2 of 5 from behind the arc, so 40% from behind the arc. Most notable stat, though, only one turnover. Russell Westbrook with only one turnover is an act of God, I must say. It is unbelievable that he finished the game with just one turnover. And it happened like damn near at the very end of the game too. So it's not like it happened somewhere along. I don't know. He almost finished the game with zero turnovers and 12 assists, I should say. Really overall just great game from Westbrook. 11 of 22 shooting, played 42 minutes. Really probably shouldn't have played all 42 of those minutes. This game was probably a lost cause after the Rockets made that push to get within six, and then the Blazers hit back-to-back threes to push the lead back out to 12 and then 14 on the very next possession after that. Harden with just 13 points. He set a season low for points against the Thunder in that game with 17, and in this game, he sets a new season low, 13 points. 8 rebounds, 7 assists, couple blocks, couple turnovers, 6 of 8 from the charity stripe, 3 of 12 shooting overall, 1 of 6 from behind the 3-point line. It's like he looked at the Grizzlies game and saw his 37 field goal attempts to get 41 points and just completely overcorrected, completely went back in the opposite direction and said, you know what, okay, I took way too many shots in the Grizzlies game. I'm just going to not shoot the ball. But the problem was, is he didn't, it wasn't like he was also looking to get other people involved. He seemed disinterested the entire game. It didn't seem like he cared about what was going on in this game until right at the very, very end in the fourth quarter, he started playing a little bit of defense on CJ McCollum. Don't know why. But he decided to, you know, D up for a few possessions. But Harden looked so bad this game. And I don't care. He played 39, 40 minutes against the Grizzlies, and it's the second night of a back-to-back. It just, at some point, where's the pride? Like, where's the swag? Where's the swag champ, you know, James Harden, the guy who actually, you know, has a, you know, a little swagger in his step? Where's that guy? because that guy I can go to war with every night. I can go to war and get behind that guy every night. But the James Harden that was in this game against the Trailblazers, the guy who's, you know, walking up and down the court, who's jogging to get back on defense, who is, you know, lazily just making a quick, you know, hand swipe at the ball is his version of perimeter defense. I don't like this version of James Harden. Thankfully, we don't see this version of him that often. But when we do see it, man, it's ugly. You know, and it prompted Mike D'Antoni after the game. Took Mike extra 20, 25 minutes to come out and meet all the media waiting for him. And he said that basically that he wanted to have a chance to, you know, talk to the team, you know, to kind of air out some things. And James Harden and Russ kind of reiterated that. And then there was a players meeting after the players were done meeting with the media. So a lot of kind of, you know, first the coach wants to talk to everybody. Then there's the, you know, players only meeting. And it's kind of that point where things are a little rocky with this team. Couple back-to-back losses. Again, you can make some excuses for the Memphis Grizzlies loss, but this loss is inexcusable. There's no reason for this one to have happened. And there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions surrounding this team. Can this team get things to work on the defensive side of the basketball to become legitimate contenders? They're not going to catch up to the likes of Milwaukee or the LA Lakers this season. That's just not going to happen. I don't think they have the personnel to do it. And as much as I love Daryl Morey as the Rockets general manager and as consistent as he is at putting a product out there on the court that can compete, I don't even know if he can pull a bunny out of his hat as a magician this season. There's no buyout market candidates yet, and even if there are, it's not going to be until after the trade deadline, so help won't arrive until mid-February at the earliest. So you've got to ride it out until then, so about another month, give or take. And there's still no guarantee that there's help out there to be had. And even if there is, then other teams like the Lakers, like the Clippers, maybe the Nuggets, maybe the Bucks. There's other teams out there that buyout market candidates can go to. It's not a given that if a, say, Marvin Williams becomes a buyout candidate, it's not a given that he's going to come to the Rockets, or Andre Iguodala for that matter. Those players aren't automatically just going to throw on a Rockets jersey and call it a day. They've got other teams and other potential avenues to a finals appearance or to a championship than just the Rockets. Now, maybe they evaluate things and think, okay, yeah, the Rockets are my best opportunity to get some consistent playing time and build up a bit of a resume for a contract next season. Sure. But there's no guarantee. I think the only guarantee right now with this team is that Russell Westbrook has been truly phenomenal. James Harden is in a bit of a funk right now, and I still fully expect him to get back to MVP form. But these games, when his body language just looks this way, it's very bothersome. And I'm sure a lot of you guys noticed it. You know, if you watch James just up and down the court in this game on defense, the lack of shots on offense, the disinterest. And I know that there was the piece by Ali Khambijani explaining why Harden hangs back at half court in certain sets to provide spacing for the team to allow them to play 4-on-4 on certain possessions. But there are times where Harden's just literally just walking up the court and his defender is nowhere near him. And the team is playing basically 4-on-5. And you can go back and rewatch the tape from this game and see multiple instances of that. So that's very disconcerting to me. There's other things that are bothersome about this. We'll talk about Isaiah Hartenstein in a second. That was all kinds of funny there. But more things to talk about this game and the team and how they kind of move on from this loss, how they kind of handle this thing and how they handle this adversity. Because teams face adversity. This won't be the first time, and it won't be the last that a team's faced any type of adversity in the NBA. But it's about how they respond to it. So we'll keep talking here in just a second, but first, a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, you can try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Talking about the Rockets' 117-107 loss against the Portland Trailblazers at home, dropping the team to 26-14. Trailblazers improved to 18-24. Rockets are now 14-5 at home. Thank goodness for Russell Westbrook, because he was about the only bright spot for the Houston Rockets. In fact, you know what? I'm actually going to take that away just because, looking at it, Ben McLemore was decent. Clint Capella was overall kind of solid. Eric Gordon was good. But there were problems for this Rockets team. Daniel House, Austin Rivers, and PJ Tucker, namely. And it sucks because this Rockets team is, it's honestly built rather poorly as far as this season is concerned when you look at the players and what they're capable of, because the Rockets really have very few players that are capable two-way style players. Daniel House is, honestly, as of the last 10 games or so, has been really atrocious. His regression has been one of the reasons that some of these games have gone the way that they have, because he has absolutely kind of fallen off a cliff with his three-point shooting, with his production, with his ability to defend. He and PJ Tucker were probably the two best defenders on the team for much of the early part of the season, and House's defense has just fallen off a cliff. Austin Rivers gives you good defense, but has turned into, at times, a black hole on offense. Now, it's not quite nearly as bad as PJ Tucker, because Austin can still drive and can still kind of keep the ball moving to an extent. So we'll save the black hole label just for PJ Tucker, but Rivers, with just 2 points, 1 of 5 shooting, missed his only free throw. He had a few rebounds, but I mean, that's basically it. 0-3 from behind the arc. And then we get down to PJ Tucker. Just had 3 points, 4 rebounds. He had an assist. He had a steal. Just 1 of 3 from behind the arc. And it's just basically, and I already remarked on this on social media, on Twitter, but it's painful to watch the ball circle its way around to PJ Tucker, and he, without even looking to see if he's open, is immediately like hot potatoing it back to whoever passed him the ball in the first place. And I understand if he's, you know, maybe not as confident in his shot right now or what, but he needs somebody to just pull him aside and say, PJ, you just got to shoot the ball. And there's going to be some people who think that it's because of the shoulder injury that he's not willing to shoot the ball. No, this has been going on well before that injury. The shoulder injury happened against the Timberwolves on Saturday. They've played a couple games since then. So let's face it, just PJ Tucker, for whatever reason, is averse to shooting the basketball. And that's not good. You can't be a hesitant shooter in this offense. So, and the worst part is those three guys, maybe not Daniel House right now because his defense has been suspect as of late, but PJ Tucker and Austin Rivers are two of your best defenders. So you've got two guys who, yeah, they're good on the defensive side of the basketball, but they're really bogging down your offense. And then you've got your offensive players, the likes of Eric Gordon, Ben McLemore, Harden, Westbrook, who have to carry the load offensively, but on defense, it's questionable at best. The number of times I saw Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum just work their way around Ben McLemore and Harden in this game is too many to count. It's ridiculous. I've really never seen such bad perimeter defense being played. And earlier this season, I remarked on the Rockets' perimeter defense and how just it has to tighten up, because if you try to funnel everything inside to Clint Capella and expect him to then try and contest everything and subsequently also somehow drag down all the rebounds, it's not a recipe for success. There's going to be some games where Clint, you know, has these monster 20-20 games, and he almost had one of these against the Trailblazers, who 14 and 18. So pretty solid game from Clint. But at the same time, it's just too much to expect him to be able to contest all the shots at the rim and secure defensive rebounds. The team either has to play better perimeter defense and actually rotate to contest shots, or maybe not to contest shots, but rotate to actually box players out. Because if Clint has to rotate over to stop the driving of guys like CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard, then somebody else has to go in and box out Hassan Whiteside. It's not that difficult of a concept. Or you buckle down, you play better perimeter defense, you don't concede the drive as easily as James Harden and Ben McLemore have been doing. And then Clint just gets to stay at home. Look, here's the thing. I'm not an X's and O's guy. I'm not. I don't pretend to be. I know enough to comment on it from time to time, but I'm by no means an expert. But you know who is an expert, or who's supposed to be an expert, is the head coach, Mike D'Antoni. It's his job to figure out what is going on with this team. And that's what's disconcerting about him as the Rockets head coach, is all he preaches is offense. And sure, he'll say in the media interviews, and he'll say the right things, and he say, well, you know, our defense, we got to try harder on that side of the basketball, and we got to do better over there. But where's the fundamentals? Where's the teaching? There's a reason that on his staff was Jeff Bezdelic, defensive guru. There's a reason that you have to get a guy to get an assistant coach who is defensive minded to balance out Mike D'Antoni. Because what he preaches is offense. And even that, I question at times based on how the Rockets' offense looks. Because at times it's a flawed system. It's a flawed system in which James Harden's usual greatness overshadows how simple this offensive system is. Maybe that's not quite the way to put it, but basically James Harden's greatness is what makes this offense great. And so when we have a game where we see James Harden look very human, very vulnerable, and it's not like Portland did anything phenomenal to stop him. I mean, yeah, they had Kent Bazemore guarding him, and Bazemore's got some length and is a solid defender. But Harden only took 12 shots. And so I think there's room in this offense, and there's room for Mike D'Antoni to really put his fingerprints on the game. Because we see some of these out-of-timeout plays that he executes that look beautiful. We've seen plays called by Mike D'Antoni, and they look like great offensive sets. Think back to the New Orleans Pelicans game in which James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Clint Capella all sat out. The offense in that game looked phenomenal for three quarters. And regrettably, they got the yips in the fourth quarter and they couldn't bring us home. I would love to see that version of an offense put in place with the entire roster available. Because imagining that number of like dribble handoffs and off-ball action and movement, it wasn't even really that much off-ball action. It was just a lot of dribble handoffs. It was a lot of, you know, the players moving without the ball and then the dribble handoff to clear a little bit of space to be able to attack moving downhill rather than just constant, you know, dribble, drive, and kick, or dribble and ISO into a contested shot. That's the kind of offense that I would like to see. And in a game where it feels like James Harden just wasn't getting clean looks or wasn't super invested in the game, maybe he was tired from the night before, 39 minutes against the Grizzlies, I don't know. But if he can have a little bit of help to get some more wide open looks rather than having to work so hard for every basket that he gets, rather than just relying on the greatness of James Harden and just making things a little bit easier for him. I'd like to point to Steph Curry and the Warriors. And yeah, Steph hits some phenomenal shots. He hits some impossible shots even from time to time with, you know, hands in his face, fully contested, you know, 30-foot three-pointers, sure. But then think about the number of times that he gets easy, wide-open looks because he's putting in the work behind the scenes, running around screens, executing plays. Again, I'm not asking for James Harden to suddenly turn into Steph Curry and never have the ball in his hands. That's not what I want. What I'd like is a little bit of variety in the offense. I think that would make James Harden's life easier, and I think it'd make the Rockets less predictable on that end of the court. The defensive issues are a whole nother demon. That is a whole nother problem. And I don't even know if a personnel change or a buyout market acquisition will suddenly improve this team's defense. But honestly, just trying harder on that side of the basketball court will help this ball club. Just caring a little bit more about defense rather than the lazy way that they played against this Trailblazers team would make them look worlds better. So that part's not hard. That's just effort. Final segment here in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. Final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Going over the Rockets' very regrettable 117-107 loss against the Portland Trailblazers at home, moving the team to 26-14 on the season. You know, pouring over these end-of-game stats, really there's not a super distinct area in which the Blazers just completely worked over the Rockets. The main one that jumps out to me is that the Rockets had 12 turnovers and the Blazers had 17 points off of those 12 turnovers. Meanwhile, the Blazers had 8 turnovers, but the Rockets were only able to capitalize in the form of 6 points off of those 8 turnovers. So that kind of jumps out to me. And then there's the free throw discrepancy as well, where the Blazers had 29 free throw attempts. They hit 24 of them for 82.8%. The Rockets just got 23 attempts, and they only hit on 15 of them for 65.2%. So that's really the game right there. Blazers were 41-95 shooting overall. Rockets were 38-96. So Blazers 43% from the floor, Rockets 39.6. There's not really that many areas. And then there's rebounding, which you can make an argument for that as well. Rockets only with 50 boards as a team, Trailblazers with 58. So there's a couple departments where the Blazers did have slight advantages over the Rockets, but that's what you get when you commit to shooting so many three-pointers every single game. The Blazers shot 11 of 36 from behind the arc for 30.6%, which is not great either. That's bad three-point shooting. The Rockets were at 32.7%, but they were 16 of 49. So they shot 13 more three-pointers to just hit 5 more threes than the Blazers did. And so all those trips down the court where you just jack up a quick three-pointer or there's very little ball movement or whatever, those are missed opportunities to drive the ball into the paint to either get a layup or a dunk or potentially create a little bit more ball movement. Now, look, I'm okay with the wide-open threes, I suppose. A wide-open shot is a wide-open shot. But when you're not hitting those shots, those are opportunities that you could have taken the ball inside, that you could have maybe gone to the free throw line. Maybe that's where the free throw discrepancy comes from. because the Rockets are shooting so many three-pointers that they're not getting as many opportunities at the rim. They're not getting as many opportunities to try and score from the free throw line as opposed to just continuing to throw up three-pointers. Eric Gordon didn't attempt a single free throw on the evening. Ben McLemore, nothing. He's a shooter. Clint Capella, no trips to the free throw line. PJ Tucker, just shooting the ball three times. No free throw attempts. Just, it's really hard to see where the extra production should have come from, and at the same time, it's not. The extra production should have come from James Harden, because the guy is averaging almost 40 on the season. And so when he only puts in 13 points, it's like you're missing a whole extra two or even three players. And that's how important he is to this roster. His greatness masks the inefficiencies of this team. Because if James Harden were to play like a regular NBA player, which, let's face it, if James Harden was a regular role player somewhere else in the league and somehow put up 13 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists, couple blocks, yeah, bad shooting night, 1 of 6, 3 of 12 overall, sure, you can make that argument. If he was a role player on any other team, that stat line would be incredible. But he's not just a role player. He's James Harden. He's the franchise player. And so he has to bring his A game every night, or the Rockets don't have a chance. Because they really can't have... I thought for a while that they could have one of Westbrook or Harden bring their A game, plus the role players bring their A game, and then, you know, one of the other part of the duo could maybe have a so-so game and it would work out just fine. Westbrook brought his A game. This is one of Westbrook's best games of the season. Harden brought a rather piss-poor performance, and the role players were kind of, about half of them showed up. So that's just not enough to make it happen. I think the evidence is still there that if you've got, you can have one of your three offensive factors not show up. But if one and a half or two don't show up, then it's game over. And those factors are James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and the role players. And in this one, James Harden didn't show up, and about half the role players didn't show up. So that's how you lose the game. I think it's pretty easy to look at it from that standpoint. And yes, there's the issues on the defensive side of the basketball. But even then, the Blazers didn't have a great game. It's not like they shot lights out. It's not like they were getting completely wide open, uncontested looks. There were some looks that were completely wide open, but there were others where, like CJ McCollum draining a three to stop the momentum in the fourth quarter with a hand in his face. That's just better shot. You know, you tip your cap and you move on to the next possession, which is why those shots you live with. If a team is going to beat you by draining three-pointers and you've got a hand in their face the entire time they're doing it, then you just nod your head. You say, all right, good game. We'll get you guys next time. But where you are upset are the moments where you have a poor defensive rotation or you don't get back in transition, or there's a miscommunication and you're giving up wide open looks, or, you know, wide open dunks or layups right at the rim. Those are the points. Those are the points that you look at and you're just like, yep, we could have, you know, we should have rotated better here. We should have communicated better here, whatever it is. Those are the points that are unacceptable. And the Rockets had a lot of those this game, especially on the interior. It did feel like there were a few points late in the third, early in the fourth, where the Blazers were getting some wide open looks right there in the corners. But especially right there at the rim, I felt like they got way too many opportunities right at the rim. I mean, you look at their starting lineup, 18 points for Melo, 18 for Whiteside, 25 for Dame, just 12 for Bazemore, 24 for McCollum. Their starting lineup torched the Rockets. Speaking of Carmelo Anthony, his revenge game against the Houston Rockets, now that he's with the Portland Trailblazers, there we go, that's the proper way to say that, kind of a friendly back and forth between Heat and PJ Tucker for parts of this game. I wish it wasn't as friendly, since Tucker was frankly getting waxed in that matchup. But it's interesting, because post-game you had the comments, you had the team take the extra time in the locker room with Mike D'Antoni, and then they met up immediately afterwards for the players-only meeting, I guess, and the comments from James about just, you know, he basically said, you know, why are we guys in the locker room, and he's just saying, just getting everything out there, just talking about everything, kind of airing their grievances, and I'm assuming that's more of what happened in the players-only meeting after they spoke with media. We've spoken about this earlier this season, where Russ has never had a guy like James to be able to hold him accountable, and James has also never had somebody that he's had a relationship with like Russ to hold him accountable. Now, CP3 definitely held James accountable, but I think that it came from a place of, it was more adversarial than it was coming from a place of friendship. And with Russ, hopefully, if Russ is going to call James out for his effort, which, let's face it, James's effort in this game is worth calling out. It's what I spent the entire first segment doing. But I'm just a talking head. James isn't going to listen to me, but he might listen to Russell Westbrook. So if Russ is going to call out James and say, dude, you need to, like, just be better, try harder, put in more effort. Like, we need to be better as a team. You and I both, as a duo, we need to be better. Because Westbrook's been holding up his end of the bargain. He had a bit of a slow start to the season, wasn't quite in game shape, had the finger issues, yeah. But he has been phenomenal as of late. And James, to start the new year, has been pretty rough overall. In 2020, James is averaging 35 points a game, so that's pretty good. He's got 8.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, a steal, a block, 5 turnovers. That number could be a little prettier. But his efficiency has kind of plummeted. He's only shooting 37% from the floor, 32% from behind the arc, 26 attempts a game. 26 shot attempts a game. 88% at the free throw line. Just his numbers are not quite as good, and it just really concerns me is the shooting inside the arc, the 37%. That's really rough. The three-point percentage has taken a bit of a dip, but that's almost to be expected, because in those 5 games, which this stretch doesn't include the Trailblazers loss yet because Basketball Reference does not update that quickly, but in those 5 games, 3 of those games he played almost 40 minutes. Played 40 against Philly, 39 against Atlanta, and then 39 against the Grizzlies. Those legs were probably kind of shot in some of those games. But really, you know, Harden hasn't had a great start to his new year, whereas Russ, in the games that he's played, has been pretty phenomenal. Again, my only gripe with Russ from this game is 7 of 12 from the free throw line. Ideally, you'd like to have him hit all of those free throws, but given his free throw struggles in the past, I'm just happy he's getting to the line, and I'm happy that he's not jacking up an obscene number of three-point shots. He got 31 points again, had a triple-double. He had a good evening, didn't turn the ball over. Russ is holding up his end of the agreement. As one half of the superstar duo, James has to hold up his end. And for the most part this season, he has. So it's hard for me to want to be too upset with James. He has more weight on his shoulders than any other superstar in this league, probably based on how this offense is built completely around him and how night in and night out he has different defenses that are completely geared to shut him down. And Westbrook gets to be the beneficiary of going up against the team's second best defender, or getting to go up against the team's opposing bench units, luxuries that James doesn't get. And look, things don't exactly get easier moving forward. This next stretch of, what, 6, 7, or 8 games in a row, going to be really rough for this team. You've got a 3-game homestand. Well, sorry, you're in the midst of a 4-game homestand, but you've got 3 games left of the 4. In a row, you've got the LA Lakers, then the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then the Denver Nuggets. And then you're on the road for four straight against the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Denver Nuggets, the Utah Jazz, and you wrap it all up again with the Portland Trail Blazers. And the Denver-Utah set of games are a back-to-back Sunday into Monday. So Sunday afternoon, a 2:30 p.m. tip-off at Denver, and then a Monday night tip-off in Utah. That's not a super easy back-to-back. That's going to be painful. But in true Rockets fashion, I kind of expect them to come out and beat the Lakers. I kind of expect them to come out, especially after a pair of back-to-back losses, three losses in the last four games, the bad Oklahoma City loss, the bad Memphis loss, the bad Portland loss. I kind of expect them to come out with some intensity and beat the Lakers and then come back out and do something silly like lose to the Thunder again or lose to Portland on the tail end of the road trip, because that's kind of how this team has been. They've been wholly inconsistent. They've played up to their competition and down to their competition. Which, hey, that could bode well come playoff time. It really could. If they're going to just consistently match the effort level of their competition, if they're going to match the performance level of their competition, maybe not necessarily the effort level, because they definitely didn't do that in the Memphis Grizzlies game, then I could see that working out for them in the playoffs. But seeding is important, and these losses will matter come the end of the season when playoff seeding is being decided. But they've got a few days rest to kind of regroup and try and get things figured out before the Lakers. It's going to be interesting. That game's going to be a good test for this team. And I didn't want to have to say it's going to need to be a bounce back win, but it's going to need to be a bounce back win, because otherwise you're going to be on another three game skid. And these three game skids don't look good. You're just going to continue to fall in the seeding. And I mean, right now you're sitting at fifth, but you're not sitting at fifth comfortably. You've got the Dallas Mavericks breathing down your neck. You're now a game back in the loss column. Sorry, a game and a half back from the LA Clippers, still just a game back in the loss column, but still you're losing a bit of ground on the Denver Nuggets, the Utah Jazz, and the Clippers with these pair of back-to-back losses. So every game is important from here on out. It really is. But it sounds like the Rockets realize they have problems. Russell Westbrook, James Harden are taking ownership of that, and it'll be interesting to see how the team addresses these things moving forward. So I think that's where we will wrap things up for today. Actually, no, it's not. I didn't even talk about it. Isaiah Hartenstein played for 55 seconds. What is Mike D'Antoni doing? I'm sorry. Like, what? That was the craziest thing to me. All I could do was laugh when that happened. Isaiah Hartenstein checks in for one possession. Shot goes up. He fails to box out Hassan Whiteside on one possession. Fouls him. Whiteside's getting free throws out of it, and that was enough for D'Antoni to say, you know what, pull him, he's out. 55 seconds in the game, and he's done. I was beside myself. I just could not do anything other than laugh, because I guess that's just Mike D'Antoni, and that's the short leash for Isaiah Hartenstein, unfortunately. So now that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website LockedOnRockets.com, and our email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that show up straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for this January 16th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.